The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. No, this is not the dulcet tones of Seth Leibson. It is Hugh Hallman, former mayor of Tempe and political has-been, and I am joined by the more brilliant of the two of us, Lewis Hallman, who is here as the managing director of Insight Analytics. We are here, we hope, not to bore you with more COVID-19 data. We will give you some of that stuff, but we have for today some conversations with people who have had some significant experience, very different experiences with the current pandemic. Specifically, we are going to be joined later in this hour by Joanne Osborne. She is a representative in our legislature from D13, and more importantly, she is a longtime businesswoman, small business. She's a jeweler, and she has had to deal with shutdowns and the pandemic disease as it's come through her town and her business. And we're going to ask her how she's dealt with it and what her thoughts are. In the 4 o'clock hour, we are going to be joined by Congressman Andy Biggs. He is our congressman from Congressional District 5, and he just wrote a brilliant editorial piece that ran at townhall.com, and I think you'll find his participation terrific. And then finally, we all will be joined in the 5 o'clock hour by M. Zudi Jasser. Dr. Jasser, of course, is known wide and far in the state of Arizona, but also internationally for his work on international relations issues. But today, we are going to be talking to him as a medical professional who is puzzled, like many of us are, about why our governor decided to close gyms for a month. So, Lewis, why don't you bring us up to date on the experience with COVID-19, the state's announcements today?
So, as seems to be usual on Wednesdays, the media is in a complete furor as...
I'd say frenzy.
Frenzy, sure. As AZDHS has announced that we have a new record number of deaths and cases announced today. But of course, the key word in that phrase is announced today, not happened today.
So what they announce exactly?
So they announced a total of 88 new deaths on their website, but I could only verify 87 of them. And then 4,877 new cases today. The issue, though, is that as we've been, you know, shouting again and again, these cases did not occur today. They were recorded today. They were discovered today. In fact, if you look at those death figures and had a view from yesterday, you would see that, in fact, only 22 of those deaths, of only a quarter of them, occurred within the last week, with the earliest death recorded as having happened on April 27th, 2 months ago.
So here we have the state reporting a death that occurred 2 months ago as if it just happened today and has created yet again another stir. This is a state agency that likes to pour gasoline all over itself and light itself on fire. Unfortunately, the flames keep leaping to the entire state. How about the case numbers, Lou?
So with the case numbers, again, we have seen 4,877 reported as of today. But if I'm doing my math correctly, I didn't write down the number foolishly, it looks like only about 3,600 of those occurred in the last week, with about 25% of them being backdated.
Well, what we also found out is, of course, the last 2 days, we had 4,877 today, 4,877 today reported, and 4,682 yesterday. But miraculously, only 625 the day before. What we do know, State Department of Health Services actually fortunately tweeted out, because that's obviously the only way you want to communicate important information to the world, tweeted out that they'd made a mistake, that they couldn't actually upload all the data because one of the lab partners had not properly reported all the data for that day. So the case number is goofed up, and so is the testing number.
That actually is a very interesting in and of itself, because in the tweet explaining this error, they said that one of their lab partners hadn't reported their data. Only one of them. But what's interesting about that is that on a Monday, you'd expect to see a fairly large increase in testing cases and deaths, just as a matter of course. The people who record these things aren't at their jobs on the weekends, and so the weekday figures are always larger. But instead of seeing the typical 3,500 to 4,000 new cases, we only saw 625 this Monday. It's very interesting that massive drop happened from the absence of one testing partner.
Well, maybe it's a major testing partner. We understand that. But all we really continue to ask for is that our State Department of Health Services become more transparent. The data you're hearing, if you're still listening, the data you're hearing is material that Lewis has to collect by hand off the state website. It would be easy enough for the state to supply all of this data, like, say, the CDC does, or even the World Health Organization supplies this data in large data sets on spreadsheets that people like us can then look at, analyze, and come to better conclusions for policymakers.
I will note, though, that when we're talking about those large data aggregators, they do make the same mistake that the media is making when they say that 88 deaths or 87 deaths occurred today. It's not that they occurred today. They were recorded today. And so the big danger of using these large aggregated data services is that they're not actually displaying the date of attribution, only the date of discovery.
So if you really want to geek out on this stuff, what Lewis and I are very concerned about is it's not just the state of Arizona. Lots of these reporting agencies are having the same trouble. But sometime in the near future, analysts and economists and data analytics folks and researchers are going to be relying on this data as if it was accurate. And we find that there are huge inaccuracies in the data sets. And because the data sets are being overwritten, especially at the state of Arizona, it's going to be very difficult to tease out what was true and what was not true.
So going off of that as well, the large aggregated data sets are generally correct when it comes to reporting the cumulative total of tests, cases, and deaths. That is, if you look at the entire time series and add all of them up across every day, the total is generally right. The problem is the day-by-day figures. This is going to distort the entire shape of what happened over the course of the outbreak. Now, the $3 trillion we've spent on this is already a sunk cost. It's gone. We're not going to get that money back. But the value that we can get is what we are able to learn from this and how we can then use it in the future if and when another large pandemic does occur. But my great fear is that we will be unable to learn the real lessons because the actual progression of what has happened is now so wildly distorted.
So to bring it down to sort of general terms, as we're looking at this, the governor made decisions on Monday. He made decisions based on data he was looking at and being told about. And that data included that, and I'll quote from his executive order 2020-43. It was issued and signed up. So it was on July 27th to go into effect. It was signed to go into effect immediately at 8 o'clock that night, and it was to continue in effect until the 27th of July, so for 30 days, from June 28th to July 27th. And it says this: there have been 73,908 diagnosed cases of COVID-19 in Arizona, including 1,588 deaths. Now, none of us likes that fact. We don't like the fact that lots of people are suffering from a disease, and we don't like the fact that 1,588 Arizonans by June 28th had died from this disease. But he then goes on to say, the state is seeing an increase in the number of cases and hospitalizations. It necessitates a need for an increased focus on precautionary measures by both businesses and individuals. Not a bad statement. I can agree with that. But then he goes on. Data has shown the community spread continues to grow at an exponential rate. Exponential rate. You remember that from grade school, right? 2 + 2 = 4. But 2 × 2 = still 4. But then 2 × 2 = 8. 2 × 2 = 16. That's exponential growth. And he's saying it's growing in that kind of a formulation. and limiting, so he says, continues to grow at an exponential rate and is greatest among the demographic 20 to 44 years old.
That would be cases growing at an exponential rate, not deaths, notice.
Well, more importantly, it's not true. Cases are not growing at an exponential rate. In fact, what we have discussed previously on the Seth Leibson show is that the data the governor is using has been skewed on him. I don't think the governor understood that, but it's been skewed. And we want to talk about that when we come back. And we want to thank listeners across the state, even across the world. We understand we have listeners as far away as Cyprus today, and we're grateful for your listening. I don't think I want to go to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend. I think that's not the state or the place I want to be. Welcome back to KKNT 960, The Patriot. We are at the Seth Leibson Show, and we are grateful to Seth for allowing us to fill in. But I'm afraid Lewis has some bad news for you, Seth.
Well, Seth, we are now seizing the means of broadcasting. We are pleased to officially announce the Holloman Autonomous Zone. We have taken over the studios, and we are going to bring you the factual information about COVID-19 and other issues that you will not get anywhere else.
Of course, the reason we've developed HAZ, the Holloman Autonomous Zone, is because Seth is overworked, and he actually deserves a little bit of time off. So that's the real reason that we've created this opportunity for a revolution. We want to get back to discussing the governor's executive order, and we welcome your calls, by the way. Anybody who'd like to call in, we're at 602-508-0960. Imagine that, 0960. The governor, of course, sent out his executive order that talks about the exponential pace and spread in our community, especially among the demographic 20 to 44-year-olds. 20 to 44-year-olds. That's 25-year spread there, Lewis. The governor gave us a nice graphic explaining that. Why don't you talk about it?
Sure. So the governor has been talking about the fact that 22% of our hospitalizations are in this demographic group, 20 to 44. It's sort of a peculiar group to focus in on because, well, first of all, it's significantly larger than any other demographic group that we're measuring.
That
the state is.
And in fairness, it is his staff and the state is measuring and handing to him.
That's correct.
So we have 20 to 44. That's a 25-year spread of ages. And then what are the other demographics they measure?
The other demographic groups are less than 20, 45-year-olds to 54-year-olds.
That's 10 years, isn't it?
Only 10. That's okay. Accurate. Yeah. And then 55-year-olds to 64-year-olds.
Another 10 years.
Yes, indeed. And then greater than 65.
And so what percentage of the population, if 22% of the people in hospitals currently are aged 20 to 44, what percentage of the population are they?
They're 32.8% of our population.
Almost 33% of the population, but they only make up 22% of the hospitalized cases.
That's correct.
And how about the age 45 to 54?
So that group, 45 to 54, is 11.9% of our state's population.
So almost 12% of the population. How many beds do they fill? What percentage?
They fill 16% of the beds.
So they're actually overrepresented. I think we ought to worry about that group. How about the next group up?
Well, the next group up is aged 55 to 64.
Again, 10 years.
Yep. They make up a total of 12.1% of our population.
Okay, 12% again.
But they fill up 19.6% of our hospital beds. More
really?
Overrepresented.
You mean as you get older, it's more likely you end up in the hospital?
It's a shocker, I know.
Yeah, okay. How about the last group?
The last group, our over 65s, make up 17.6% of our population, but make up 40.5% of our hospitalizations.
So maybe what we ought to be closing are bocce ball courts, square dancing arenas, other places where folks in that age demographic might congregate. It does strike me that we still know, everybody listening knows, we know who's at risk. The folks, the older you get, the more at risk you are. And then if you have comorbidities, like if you're obese or if you have diabetes, we know who to focus on.
That's exactly right. Let me actually make this even more clear and do sort of an apples to apples. Let's look at the hospitalization rate. So for if you are 20 to 44 years old and you do test positive for the virus, 2.8% of those people are hospitalized.
So people in that age demographic, 20 to 44, it's only a 2.8% chance that they'd end up in the hospital.
That's correct.
What about the other demographics?
So if you're 45 to 54, you have about a 6.5% of being hospitalized if you test positive for COVID.
And?
55 to 64s have a 10.2% chance of being hospitalized with COVID. And over 65s have a 20.6% chance of being hospitalized with COVID. That's nearly an eightfold increase over the group that the governor is very, very concerned about, the 20 to 44-year-olds.
So this strikes me a lot like the guy looking for the key under the lamppost. He lost the key someplace else, but at least he's got light to be looking. We keep focusing light on things that don't matter as much, and instead of spending our time and resources on the people we know who are at risk, we are wasting our time and our political capital. And that's the important point here. When you take action as a governing body, you have political capital you're spending. And some people are going to be angry and some people are going to be happy. And if you misspend that political capital, people stop trusting you. They see that you've wasted their time and their resources. So as we've heard the drumbeat that our state is overwhelmed because the press wants to play that card, we now have a governor who's been pushed to action, and the action was to close bars that have a Series 6 or 7 liquor license, to close indoor gyms and fitness clubs or centers, indoor movie theaters, and water parks and tubing operators.
Let me analogize, if I may, your point about political capital to telling the truth. If I lie once and then tell the truth 100 times, I'm still a liar. And it's very hard for people to trust me. If you mislead people, if you don't trust them to act correctly, and you have to lie, browbeat, and manipulate them into doing whatever it is that you say, they become more and more reticent to trust you. It's a catastrophic failure, because what it's going to haunt any administration at any level that this happens in perpetuity. It will take a long, long time and really serious exercises of trust to regain that.
And our concern is not that our governor is incompetent or evil. It is that he's got staff folks who seem to have a political agenda themselves. And as a result, he's being that mirrors exactly the kinds of claims that were being made 3 weeks ago by a large healthcare organization. And of course, we have the former director of the health department out there beating the same drum. They have been for 3 weeks. And when the governor is articulating talking points that seem to be coming from folks who have an agenda, I have to start asking why. Why is it that we have political capital being squandered by our governor? He needs that capital to encourage and lead our state to better results. And unfortunately, we've got him now put into a position where he's spent that capital, and it's going to be very hard to pile it up again. Lou, any thoughts on how to start that process?
Well, if I think what I would do is I would acknowledge publicly that mistakes have been made and that we've had issues in the past, and then I would lay out a very public, very transparent plan on what we're going to do going forward and how we're going to correct for that.
Sage advice from a younger man than me. We look forward to talking to Joanne Osborne, the legislator from District 13, coming up in just a moment. You're listening to the Seth Liebson Show. Oh, I'm sorry. The Holman Autonomous Zone. You're on KKNT 960, The Patriot. I hate to speak over this tune. It's a great song. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the Holman Autonomous Zone for the day, at least. We are grateful to Seth Liebson for allowing us to take over his studio and hope not make too big a mess of things. We are delighted and honored to bring in for the show a woman who has represented our state at the legislature. It is Joanne Osborne. She is the representative from District 13. And the reason we wanted to bring Joanne in is because she is a small business person. She's actually a tall human being, but she runs a small business. She's a jeweler, and she has spent significant amounts of time working diligently to keep her business afloat. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to one of my heroes, Joanne Osborne. Joanne, welcome to the show. That's assuming
Hello.
I can. There you are.
Hello. Thank you.
Thank you again for agreeing to join us. I was hoping you might let everybody know the kind of experience you've had as a business person who's trying to survive this pandemic. Tell us your story.
Well, I appreciate you having me on today. And this has been quite the experience, I will say that. My husband and I, this November, will be in business 30 years. And we've never experienced this type of situation. You know, back in March, when the virus was really starting to take off and all the concerns were coming, we started to see a decline in customers coming into the store. And by the time, you know, April 1st came around, March 31st, where we had the complete lockdowns, you know, we were seeing where people were already wanting to, you know, stay at home. And at that time, you know, we were considered a non-essential business, and we closed for 30 days. And I stood there looking at all my staff, and I said, okay, you know, we're going to do our part for our fellow man for the next 30 days, but that's all I'm giving it. I'm giving it 30 days. And our employees were top of mind, and I went out and got the PPP loan to make sure that we kept our team together. But, you know, we also have them do Zoom meetings, and we did our best to stay together as a team. During the time, we also came together, and in groups of five in our store, we made face shields for our community. And, you know, that was just something that we tried to do. As the beginning of May rolled around, you know, we were able to, right before Mother's Day, reopen. And the month of May was going all right. We had put in all kinds of items to help keep the public and our employees safe. You know, jewelry, half our business is repair, and jewelry's coming right off a person's body. So, you know, we did whatever we could. My front staff was wearing their masks, and we had hand sanitizer, and we had, you know, alcohol spray, all these things we were trying to do to keep everyone safe. And it was tough. I mean, May, especially for brick-and-mortar retailers around Arizona, also the tourism industry, we all rely on the spring to get us through the hot summer months.
And, of course, you were then closed down for much of the spring. Let me ask you this. As a small business person, were you able to get your employees back? We've heard some stories of folks who were not able to get their employees to return because with the federal assistance and the state assistance, folks were making $21 an hour, not coming back to work. How did that work out for you?
I kept them completely whole by paying them what their salary or their hourly wage was through the PPP.
So your employees then didn't end up going on to unemployment?
No, they did not.
Amazing.
I kept my team together.
That is an impressive effort. You then said you also were making masks. Where was the delivery spot? Who did you provide those to?
So I wanted to make sure that we had them really for the community, more the kind of the food banks and some of the elderly care centers that may not have that quick availability to some of the PPE supplies. You know, during April, that was the thing that everybody talked about, was there enough PPE supply around. And we gave some to a food bank. We kept 25 for our own staff. And I have a few boxes ready to give out to whoever needs them.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Joanne Osborne, who is the representative from D13. Joanne, can you stick with us after the break?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. So fourth generation Arizona, Joanne Osborne here on the Seth Liebson Show, KKNT 960, The Patriot. Oops, we forgot. It's now the Hallman
Autonomous Zone.
There we are. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be right back with Joanne Osborne. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. I'm Hugh Hallman. I'm joined by Lewis Hallman. It's the Hallman Twins here on the Hallman Autonomous Zone, filling in for Seth Liebson. We're at 960 The Patriot, KKNT. We have with us Joanne Osborne. She is the legislator from District 13, who is a fourth-generation Arizonan. There aren't many of them out there. I'm one. Actually, Lewis is fifth-generation as a result. She has served us on the Goodyear City Council for more than 10 years. She was vice mayor, and she decided to take the leap in 2018 and got herself elected to the legislature. Joanne, welcome back.
Thank you.
We have none other than Rusty Bowers, who happened to mention to me that you are a leader guided by principle and integrity. That's not a bad statement to have from the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Lewis, however, wanted to ask you a question.
Well, first, I wanted to commend you for taking, you know, the incredible hardship of the pandemic and turning it into an opportunity for charitable work, donating face shields to food banks in the community. It's a really inspiring and wonderful move on your part.
Well, thank you very much.
Then I also wanted to ask, though, I believe you're the only small business person in the Arizona legislature. I think this gives you a unique perspective.
I think as a retailer. Yeah.
As a retailer, excuse me, that most others wouldn't have. So my question is this. What do you think that we could be doing to better insulate and protect small businesses, you know, without compromising safety during this crisis?
Well, I appreciate that question. You know, this has been a very difficult time, and of course, there's no playbook as to how to deal with this pandemic. I think what was very frustrating is as small business owners being told that, you know, we had to close, but some other retailers were allowed to be open. And, you know, we all know our business. We all do our best. The virus did hit my store, but going forward, I think that we just have to keep in mind that we want to protect each other and we want to continue on doing those best practices, but we cannot afford to shut down the economy. We cannot afford to have our citizens go through any more mental anguish or stressors, being unemployed, children not getting the proper education that they need. You know, things like that we have to come to grips on and figure out how to get through it.
Well, you mentioned Joanne, you mentioned that the COVID-19 hit your store. What happened? Tell us about that.
Well, as much as we did, as much as we tried, we had a couple of staff members start showing symptoms. And, of course, we sent them home like we're supposed to. And then we had our very first positive test come out of one of the employees. And at that point, I decided, you know what? We don't know what we're dealing with here, and I closed the store. And I felt that was the responsible thing for me to do as a business person, is to protect my staff, protect our customers, and figure out what we were dealing with. And that was, you know, the beginning of that. We were closed all last week. We're closed this week. We're going through our quarantine time, but ready to open back up Monday. And that's, you know, the thing that I felt we needed to do. And I think that most business people realize that and will do the right things within their business and for their employees. And I hope that as leaders of communities that business people are, that they are always keeping that top of mind.
Just to be clear, you weren't obligated to close your store over the last couple of weeks. You chose to out of respect for the safety of the community. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That was my call. And it hurts. It financially hurts. You know, I mean, we went from 30 days being closed back in April to 2 weeks now. And to top it off, I had spent $20,000 on sending out a promotional postcard for our customers and then closed. So, you know, I tell you, it's been one thing after another, but I know we'll get through this. Yep. And I'm optimistic.
How many employees do you now have?
We have 17.
That's a bunch of people to keep employed, and they've got families, and they're all dependent on the fact that they're working for you, and you're paying them a paycheck, and they're able to make their rent or pay their mortgage payment. Have you seen any lessons from that part of your experience that you might, as a legislator, take into the legislature in a special session or in the upcoming session?
Well, you know, the House did go back into session and try to finish up some work. And we also had a couple bills. One particular that has been top of mind that I've heard from a lot of business owners and school districts is the liability issue.
Explain that to folks. I don't think folks on the inside of government kind of maybe understand that, but I think most Arizonans don't understand what that issue is and what you were as a legislator trying to do to solve it.
Well, it was more the concern of, you know, false lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits that were so everybody was worried about, and also unemployment, you know, worrying about can they get their employees back. Those are probably the top two issues I kept hearing from fellow business people.
Well, I think it's not even just frivolous lawsuits. What we've got now is government setting a standard of behavior in great detail about the kinds of activities businesses must do, kinds of activities they should do. And all of those are now setting a legal standard for performance and behavior that if you don't meet it and somebody becomes injured or sick, you might get sued. And the standard is that the government has set unbelievably high performance metrics for businesses to comply with and expect people can achieve those perfectly. And when they don't, the lawsuits happen. Was the legislature working on the bill to try to address that whole liability issue?
Yes, we were. And then the Senate finally died, so it died with it. And we have not had a special session.
So why do you think the governor has not yet called the legislature back into session? I recently read a piece by a fellow legislator of yours complaining about the fact that had they known that the governor would not call the legislature back into special session to start addressing these issues, that they would not have supported sine die. What do you think we ought to do now?
Well, I can't speak for the governor, obviously. He's going to make the best decisions he believes he should. There are a lot of unanswered things that we need to work on and deal with. And, you know, I'm ready to work whenever that decision is made. I think there's just a lot of different subjects that need to be taken up. And so whether it's a special session just on COVID or a special session on education, you know, there's multiple different things to discuss. I do not believe we need a special session on budget yet, because I don't think we've seen, you know, the full complexity of what our finances are going to be yet. And quite frankly, till the third quarter, are we going to know what COVID has, you know, done to our state financially.
Well, we're grateful for your service, Joanne. Joanne Osborne, legislator from District 13, out in the Goodyear direction. She has served us on the Goodyear City Council and now for a term in the legislature. Joanne, thank you very much for spending your afternoon with us and for helping to inform the folks. It's Hugh Hallman and Lewis Hallman on KKNT 960 The Patriot, The Seth Liebson Show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Oops, I'm sorry. It's the Hallman Autonomous Zone, at least for today. I'm Hugh Hallman, and I'm joined by Lewis Hallman. We just heard from Joanne Osborne, a legislator from District 13, who, as a small business person, has had to deal with some real crises. And I think, Lou, you had some thoughts.
Yeah, I'm just flabbergasted that, you know, she decided voluntarily to shut down her business out of concern for the community and the health and safety of her workers without being obligated to do so. It's almost as if people will actually make responsible choices when given the opportunity, that voluntary notions and virtue ethics about how to behave and when to take action generate great outcomes. And it's almost as if we don't need the overreaching almighty hand of the state telling us exactly what to do, when, where, and why.
Well, in fact, I'd argue that, Lou, the challenge we face is when government takes action and forces compliance, we lose the entire notion of societal connection, and that using that opportunity to build our community instead of destroy it. Not everybody's going to comply, but most people will, unless you've broken trust with them. And I think what we're now seeing is government has been pushing the sheep along with big sticks, and frankly, it's been revealed that not quite telling the truth all the time. Yes, we all understand when mistakes are made, own up to them, and then we can rebuild trust. But when you make the statements that then turn out not to be true and instead start engendering fear within your community.
And giving out misinformation continually.
Using that misinformation to drive fear. You're really trying to drive compliance through fear. And that demonstrates a complete failure of leadership, not a success of leadership. And my hope would be that in the coming weeks, we'll see that improved. Own up to those mistakes. Right now, you look at, and we'll be talking to Dr. Azudi Jasser at 5 o'clock about the fact that we've had a closure of gyms, which doesn't seem to be upheld by any data. And we'll be talking in the next hour with Congressman Andy Biggs, who wrote a spectacularly good editorial. He's our congressman from CD5, serving as currently in Washington, D.C. And he wrote a piece that I think is going to help us understand why we need to change directions.
If you'd like to be able to download all of the data we use for our analysis, visit InsightAnalyticsLLC.com. It will all be uploaded later this evening as soon as we get home.
So the answer is, folks, we're trying not to make it up. You can double check our work. We're happy to be held accountable, and we look forward to that. Thank you again, Seth Liebson, for allowing us to take over your studio during the Hallman Autonomous Zone. This is Hugh Hallman with Lewis Hallman on KKNT 960, The Patriot.